We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam podcast brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. It'll be the best 45 minutes of your life, I promise. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Shower, shave, and coffee, it's time to get that sports fix. Bring a case of the Mondays, then there's Would You Rather, just a little bit of awkward. So tune in live today. It's Dusty and Kale.
Which one's crusty and which one's dusty?
My sports package is huge now.
Where are you at, brother?
Hornswoggled, befuddled.
I'm ready to crush your dreams in the morning.
Lighten up, Cam.
You don't even have a barn.
Would have built one just for you.
You'll love your dog.
I love you.
It's time for Dusty and Cam.
We've got to bifurcate those two things.
Good morning, happy Tuesday to you, the 18th of February, 2020. Dusty here, Cam Cleland. Mr. Cleland, how are you, sir? Did you have a great President's Day?
You know what? Good morning. I thought I was, you know, there was a great little skit commercial in Saturday Night Live called Hibernol with Chris Farley.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
I felt like I was in Hibernol on Monday. I slept till 9:15.
Whoa.
I can't even believe it. I don't even know what happened. I don't know if it was stored up for over years. The longest I've slept in forever, and I couldn't believe it. But the thing is, the whole rest of the day I was exhausted. So obviously they can't do that anymore. But it was incredible.
Yeah, did you feel
incredible
groggy
sleep in
for
period.
Hours? Like hours
horrific.
Upon hours?
I had to get up and walk around. I mean, I walked the dog, move around. I didn't feel better till the afternoon.
That's a long sleep in.
Yeah, well,
it's a very long sleep in.
Yeah, I fell asleep at around 11:30, so it's not that long. So it's like, yeah, but that's a long sleep in.
I mean, it's 10 hours of sleep.
Is that 10:30? Math? I mean, math is hard.
Nine, yeah.
11:30.
You went
9 hours and 45 minutes.
You went almost double digit hours of sleep.
I might have woken. Yeah. Woof. So it's been a long time since I've done that. So yes.
Okay.
It was an incredibly exasperating weekend.
Exasperating. What was exasperating
You didn't happen to notice the largest basketball sports tournament in the entire region?
Yeah, you
on
told
all
me
of
about
Portland.
That. You told me about that. At
every
the hoop.
Gym, everyone. Oh, see, I got a question for all of us out there. Maybe it's probably not enough listeners for that.
Little known fact: I played in the opening weekend of the hoop basketball tournament.
Why?
When I was a kid.
Oh, when you, I was,
when I was
you,
a kid, like I, when it opened, like when
no,
it
I
opened,
you meant
opened.
Recently, is there an old guy division? I didn't know there's an old guy division.
I bet okay. There is. There used to be.
I got a sportsmanship question.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw a score.
Okay.
Saw a local team beat another localish team, seventh graders, 91-9.
Okay.
Didn't stop pressing them the entire game. At some point in time, do you look at and go, maybe we shouldn't do that anymore? Or are you on the camp of you sign up, you pay, you play, you get your butt kicked. That's kind of how it works. It's what it is. I'm indifferent on this weird. I'm really having a hard time with this kind of mindset of the culture. I don't care either way. I look at it and I go, is it good or is it bad? Are you learning something to get your butt kicked 91-9? Or are you feeling better that you kicked someone's butt 91-9, didn't stop embarrassing them on the court? I don't understand it.
Wait.
Maybe it's surpassed me. Maybe I've lost all the mindset. I saw kids that were supposed to be seventh graders that have beards and were like, good morning. I mean, it's like, everybody's held back. It's just, But you know what? Great tournament. A lot of people, a lot of fun. People from all over the area played in the tournament. Not bad-mouthed the tournament. But boy, is this culture just beyond.
It's seventh grade.
No, yeah, man. That's 17-year-old eighth graders.
Excuse me?
I might be fudging a little.
You said it was seventh grade, right? You said that's what grade
there's
it was?
Divisions. There's divisions all the way up from five-year-olds, I think,
How old were these kids that got beat?
Seventh grade.
So, yeah, okay.
Well, seventh graders, but not seventh grade age.
Okay.
Whatever seventh grade age you want to say
oh,
it
dear
is.
Dear God. Okay.
91-9?
Yes, that is Bush League. And
how do you even sleep with yourself after that?
On one part, because I'm assuming that in a tournament of this size, you had like gold, silver, and bronze level brackets, right?
Yes, where division. Like, they have different divisions.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Different divisions.
On one hand, was this like the gold premier bracket?
No, it was not. Unfortunately, at the time, maybe there wasn't enough teams. So now, supposedly there wasn't enough teams to form a lower division. So they just had to intertwine all the divisions kind of like an open. So you got a draw. You might get some kids that just wanted to have a good time and play and ended up playing some very talented teams. And I'm not poo-pooing on talent. Talent is, I appreciate that. But at 91-9,
that is excessive. And this is the thing is like, if you have a team that should be playing in like the premier bracket or elite or gold or whatever you want to call it, and they're playing down and they're doing that to teams, that's even more Bush League.
It's
a Bush League move to beat somebody by that much. Like, unless you're not even trying and like you're,
but
if you're
pressing
full
the
core
entire
pressing,
game. Pressing the entire game
and you Didn't still stop. Have all your guys in like, that
Good
is
or bad.
A horrible,
but I know
what are
that's
the kids learning? What are those kids learning?
Well, I've asked
on either side.
I've asked other coaches. Coaches like, well, that's the tempo you have to play at anybody because if you don't practice, if you don't do those things, then when you do match up against a really good team, you're not going to have the right practice. I wholeheartedly disagree with that, but maybe sportsmanship is, I don't know.
You know what kind of happens in this is that when we start there and we ramp it up to by any means necessary, you impose your will. By any means necessary, you do what it takes to win. By any means necessary, you go that extra step. Then like you take these incremental steps and then there are people that will eventually, and I'm not saying all of them will, but eventually you will go over the edge and you will step into not just what's happening on the floor, but what's happening off the floor, and you get things happen like the Houston Astros, like where you have sign stealing and by any means necessary, you pound your opponent. That, like everybody's been saying, that's a talented team, right? That's a talented team. Did they need to do that? They were talented enough to win on their own. But by any means necessary, you keep kind of instilling that into people and you get people that cross over a line.
Right.
And that is where I have a problem with that kind of line of thinking in youth sports.
I really do agree. I think it's a great tournament. I think it brings a lot of notoriety, a lot of people locally. It's fun to watch, and the kids get a chance to play at all different levels. I came away with two really discrepancies because my daughter's the only girl on a boys team, so she plays with boys and she does that, and that's fun and that's great for her to do that. And then my son plays on another team, but I came away with this thought: sportsmanship, on a whole, is on its way out. On a whole, it's on its way out.
That's unfortunate.
It's on its way out. And secondly, parents' actions on courts, within that small space to officials, coaches, and other parents, I couldn't be more disappointed in where we are. I couldn't be more. I'm lost. I'm lost at this. There wasn't one game that I didn't sit and see parents arguing. Not one. Yelling, screaming, coaches 20 feet out on the court, attacking referees, just like accosting them. That's a big word. I don't know. Sometimes you do that, but verbally abusing them.
Really?
I just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? I mean, I just don't know where we're at anymore. So I'm just like, I'm trying to take deep breath. It's going to be okay. We'll move on. Life will move on. But sometimes I just go, this is one of those weekends where you went vacation weekend. No, it wasn't. It's not a complaint. It's just a statement, and I'm wondering if there's anyone else feeling like me out there. Because I come away with it, I go, they're just kids anymore, and I just try to wrap my head around that.
Where do you fall onto that line, though? Do you find, like, and this is not a, like, when, I mean, do I, you find yourself, when you're surrounded by all those people, inherently, like, it rubbing off on you a little bit, and you having to catch yourself and go, what am I doing?
No, I don't, no, maybe there's might be a little faction of, I always try to just bark, or I always like say one or two code words, and I just talk to the kids. It's like, okay, come on, play hard, stuff like that. I stay off officials, never touch it. I saw a father jump up and scream from the as long as and went after a trainee referee. She was training. She was a female referee. She didn't even know to keep her whistle in her mouth yet. She's still working. She's trying to become a very good referee. Scream, just badgering this young lady. I'm like, hey, this is where we're at.
But there are some people who their justification for it is, if I'm going to pay this much, I better have
That's exactly what it is. It's like, if I'm going to pay my money, and it's just like anything. You think as a fan, you can go to any sporting event, anywhere from professional to youth. It's like, I paid my money to get here. My kid paid to get here. I deserve the right to do whatever I want. Well, I just don't know if I'm overreacting a little bit. I'm just a little bit disappointed sometimes. Still good. But this, like, sportsmanship and where are we?
How new is it, though? I mean, this doesn't seem like it's anything new.
It's getting horrifically worse.
Why? How so? Because these are a lot of the same complaints that you had before, in youth sports before, and not just you, but like you hear them all the time, and it's been happening for years.
Yeah.
Is it getting worse, or is it just the same people again and again?
No, I think it's just consistently getting worse. I think it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I mean, I saw fathers going after different families, and I just, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? I'm trying to start it out on a positive note. So there was my thought. This was my thoughts over the weekend.
Great positive note.
No, if we could do more, if we could just do more, maybe it's just take a breath.
Yeah.
Take one more breath before you explode.
I've been hearing these though. I have a cousin who his son plays like high level competitive soccer down in California. And it was like, you hear about that stuff. He's like, dude, people are crazy. Like, parents are psychopaths down there. And I think we're just sticking out a little bit more up here because it's new to us up here. It's like it creeping in and infiltrating up here. Like down in Southern California, you go to Florida, Texas. This stuff is commonplace down there, unfortunately. And what's the way you stop it? I mean, is it going to take people just calling out those coaches and parents?
But that's the thing.
Is that what they want?
You can't, because financially they're supporting the people that are putting all this stuff on. So what do you do?
What do you mean they're supporting?
Like, parents are financially supporting everything.
Yeah.
Like, they're paying for the special coaches. They're paying for the travel.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying for this. And they're all that. So at that point, you go, well, they're paid for it. Their kids cost $700 to come in here. And then he pays $5,000 to be on, or $1,500. At some point, you go, I mean, that's just like, I don't know. Hmm. I don't have an answer. I don't. It's scary. It's just a little scary. It's not a bad. It's not to the point where we need, world panic needs to set in like the coronavirus something. That's not what I'm saying. It is a virus to be.
I got an idea.
But we're here. I'm just here to make aware. So I got a microphone. Sometimes I want to tell you what I saw. And when 91-9 comes up on a scoreboard of seventh grade kids, I find a really disappointing mindset of that.
It's a D-bag move.
I just find it disappointing. At this point in time, you need to keep your national ranking. You need to keep yourself relative and up with everybody else across the country. Fine. That's fine. If that gets you where you need to be, but I don't know what beating somebody 91-9 does for it.
I think your national ranking thing just
I don't know it. I don't know.
Here's my fix. You have a tournament official, couple of them, who just walk around. Their job is just to make sure people are in line.
Well, they had those.
You can just say, you gone.
They had those.
And it's like, it is truly zero tolerance instead of, we're going to let this stuff slide. Like, how many people got tossed then?
Well, they had to bring up security and their security people. They were undercover security people.
Just undercover toss their security. Ass out.
I know. No. My officials, like these guys, one official's been doing it for years. He's like, oh, these people are coming out on the court after me. Dads are coming out on the court.
Yeah.
Coaches are storming after me.
Get him out of there. Toss him out. Let's go. Boom. Ugh. Give him the big hook. You should hire like a nightclub security. That can be a little day job for him.
Yeah.
You know, have those big burly dudes out there. Okay.
All right. So that was that
good
weekend.
Start.
And I also saw on the Oregonian that supposedly this is not new to me, but it's not new to you and all the other Oregonians, that just give it the rest of it to Idaho.
Oh, greater. I do have greater Idaho in the notes.
Just give it away.
Yep. Yeah, we're on. It's back.
I find it extremely interesting.
There's a lot of questions that I have for 745.
We'll get into this, but what makes Idaho think they can take some coastline? Come on.
Was coastline involved?
Oh, yeah. All the way to the coast.
I didn't look at the map in
the
detail.
The map is a hell of a thing.
You want to expand into nothingness? Fine. Don't take the coastline. That doesn't belong to you.
Don't you do that. It's a hell of a thing, Greater Idaho. If you don't know what Greater Idaho is, do a little research on it, Google it, and then we will discuss it at 745. P1 Social today, somebody's lying. And these aren't accusations that you just lightly throw around. Myles Garrett versus Mason Rudolph. And somebody came to the defense of Mason Rudolph yesterday, who does not speak out very often. It's damning for both of them. Which side are you standing on right now is the believable party in this, as Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph lobbing jabs back and forth via social media and the media itself. Astro sign stealing continues to get new legs every single day. And I want to talk a little All-Star game, believe it or not, at some point during the show. That's a thing.
I remember it was just like yesterday.
All right, on this date in sports history, 1979, it was the first Daytona 500 that was broadcast from start to finish on television, as Richard Petty won, holding off race leaders Cale Yarborough and Donnie Allison as those two crashed on the final lap. That was on this date in sports history, 1979, and why that is a noteworthy today is because Daytona 500 ended with the leader of the race crashing yesterday in Ryan Newman.
It was a scary crash.
Oh, my gosh. It was a terrifying crash. And the weekend in sports in the Daytona 500, that is kind of where we'll start, because it was a loaded sports weekend, and it is amazing fact what happened to Ryan Newman yesterday. We'll give you an update to his status next. Dustin Cam on the Fan. All right, 6:22 on your Tuesday morning. Dusty here, Cam Cleland. We are back. Yesterday went national across the platforms of 1080 The Fan. I know it's a surprise to everybody when we are not working on holidays, but we're back. Daytona 500 over the weekend, and it was delayed due to weather on Sunday, and they raced it yesterday. Did anybody watch any of the Daytona 500? Did you get a chance to watch any of it? Do you watch racing at all?
Not as much as I used to. I used to watch a lot of it. I really did, but there was just so many other things.
Buck's a race guy.
I knew what was happening, and I try to follow it, but I never sit down to watch the entire race, so I intentionally tried to watch like the last 15 or 20 laps, and that was taking about an hour because they had three wrecks before the big one at the end. And so I gave up on it and I went to the gym. But I saw the highlights later, but could not get through the final 15 laps.
Well, you have Denny Hamlin winning again, back-to-back, third time in 5 years for Denny Hamlin, who's sponsored by Jordan, which is always interesting to see. But it was a fiery crash at the end where Ryan Newman, and I just caught the highlights of it. I didn't watch it. I just watched the replays over and over again. And I was stunned as Ryan Newman was in the lead, and he got his bumper locked with Ryan Blaney, who ended up taking second.
Teammates, by the way, correct?
Maybe. Is that right? Teammates? I don't know how the teams work in racing. I'm not going to lie. But
it's a Roush family Roush Fenway.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he spun out, and Ryan Newman spun out, and you sit there and you go, oh my goodness, think of the technology that those race cars have, to where he flipped on his car, on the hood, on the top of his car at 200 miles an hour, and spun, got hit from the side by Corey LaJoy, and at 200 miles an hour, Ryan Newman is in serious condition, non-life-threatening injuries, though, for him. I was just in awe because there were sparks flying up. It just looked like he was on the driver's side hood roof that it was leaned on. I was stunned that he's alive in that. I mean, that is incredible to think of.
Yeah, the technology goes into those automobiles are incredible. I mean, to be able to keep them on the ground. Remember, they're going 200 miles an hour. I mean, the way they're designed now to keep the air, has it flowing, how the pressure keeps it down, the tire, everything. I mean, the engines, the power, everything that's involved in that racing is incredible. where they do it. For him to survive that, it is. It's a monster cage inside there.
Yeah.
Where they're strapped in and protect as much as they can be. But that's, I mean, you're racing a car 200 miles an hour.
You see a wreck like that, though, and the fact that, I mean, we don't know that he's going to be able to fully recover from it. We don't know what the status is.
Life-threatening.
But the fact that he is not dead after that is remarkable when you see a crash like the one that Dale Earnhardt Sr. had that looked, I don't want to say harmless because it obviously wasn't, but to the naked eye didn't seem like it was nearly as severe as the one that Ryan Newman sustained.
He was running into a wall and like side on the wall. But they're
going 200 miles an hour.
I know. It's incredible.
You can't even process that. You get a crash going 25. You're like, oh my, can you imagine going 200 miles an hour?
And if you've never been to one of those, have you ever been to one of those races live, like an Indy car or a NASCAR race or anything like that?
I have never been to one live yet, but I've been to a lot of like small races.
Yeah. Like the small little sprint tracks or whatever, like when Portland Speedway was open here back in the day. I remember we used to go to the IndyCar races that used to be at PIR and go down on the straightaway, and just, you don't realize how fast they're moving on television because all of them are moving at the same speed. Mm-hmm. But when they go by you, you're just like, oh my goodness, it is a blur. And that is what he went from on all four wheels to, that blur flipped upside down. And the sparks that were flying into the car, I was just like, there's no way. Like, there's absolutely no way. And then you see how, like, nobody knows kind of what happened or the severity of the incident. And Denny Hamlin's crew and Joe Gibbs Racing, they're celebrating in the infield, and there's like confetti cannons going off because they have no idea what happened. They have no idea how serious it is. And then when you see like the moment that they figured it out, it's like all of it just stopped. And it was like, oh God, something's really serious happened. It's kind of a stunning thing to see in real time, the looks on people's faces when that happens.
It's a unique thing too, because these guys, even though they all compete against each other, they travel together all over the country every week.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like
a family.
It's not like one, you know, football or baseball team or whatever that you play one opponent and then you go somewhere else and play another. These guys are together all year round. And so, you could see through social media and some of the interviews afterwards, just how affected really all the racers were.
That's a great point, is that they compete against each other, but you know, day to day they're traveling together. Amazing to think of the technology that's gone into that. Ryan Newman is now in serious condition.
4 hour race. Am I right? Is that the total amount? Is that really about the average?
It's supposed to be three, but between crash delays and weather delays, it took upwards of 4 hours.
Wow.
They're driving 500 miles though.
Yeah.
In 3 to 4 hours.
This was the longest one ever. They ran. It was 209 laps. They had to do a bunch of extra overtime laps because of all the wrecks and delays.
Can you imagine being a fan watching that 4 hours?
Well, BYOB.
And the ones
bring
who
your own beer?
Needed to go back to work on Monday, who didn't get to see it on Sunday because of the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's over 100,000 people that go to the thing. Daytona 500, Denny Hamlin wins back-to-back. Ryan Newman in serious but non-life-threatening injuries, serious condition, non-life-threatening injuries after crashing. We had another thing come up over the weekend that we thought was going to just kind of go away. Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns was reinstated last week by the National Football League after taking off Mason Rudolph's helmet and beating him with it. And he lobbed some accusations in an interview with ESPN that has the Pittsburgh Steelers as a whole all fired up. Someone's lying here, and it's damning for one of them. Here's Buck with SportsCenter.
Every morning at 6:30, Dusty and Cam want to hear from you.
Went to the coast, we get together, have a few laughs.
Text us at 55305. I'd love to berate you.
It's time for Dusty and Cam's P1 Social.
Want me to drive?
No, I'll drive.
The time of the day where you drive the conversation.
Well, we're waiting.
Text us at 55305 and get social with us.
This is your time.
On 1080.
I'll go out there and take it.
The Fan.
55305. That is the Fan text line. Dusty here, Cam Cleveland with you on this Tuesday morning. Okay, we thought it would go away and just be ending with Myles Garrett's reinstatement last week, but after taking off Mason Rudolph's helmet, hitting him with it, and being suspended for 6 games, Myles Garrett wasn't happy with just a reinstatement. In an interview with Mina Kimes of ESPN, Myles Garrett was asked straight up what happened.
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't like, man, I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R. To me personally, just shouldn't be said. And whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to, you know, find that appropriate around me for anyone to use. So when he said it, you know, it kind of sparked something, but I still tried to let it go and still walk away. Once he came back, it kind of, you know, kind of reignited the situation.
After that, Mason Rudolph tweeted out that it was a bold-faced lie, 1,000% false, and he's just trying to attack his character. Said, I don't say the N-word, whether with it's with an A or an E-R. And Mason Rudolph, firm in his stance.
Well, yeah, this is, he said, a disgusting, reckless attempt to assassinate my character.
Pretty bold there. But this goes back to, all right, why even acknowledge it or answer it if you're Myles Garrett and answer that question? Like, why don't you just want this whole thing to just go away and get back into the league? If the NFL's own investigation found that there was zero knowledge that word was used in any of this. And it got to the point where Mike Tomlin, of all people, head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, he came to the defense of his quarterback.
When these allegations returned this past weekend, I thought it was appropriate that Mason is properly defended. It was a thorough investigation done by us and the National Football League. I don't think that was represented during that piece. These accusations are serious, not only in terms of Mason Rudolph's character, but his professional pursuits. Nobody on that field as a member of the Cleveland Browns or the Pittsburgh Steelers corroborated what was said by Myles Garrett. That was founded by us and the National Football League. And at no point during that piece this weekend, that was stated.
It's pretty serious. Those are serious statements on both sides. And this means a lot for both guys. I think that When I listen to it, and I've listened to Coach Tomlin, I certainly listened to Mason Rudolph and now Myles Garrett and everything, and I'm not going to get on one side or the other at this point. I just think that this is where we're at, and I think, let me look at it from Mason's point of view, from his perspective. You know that if that type of language, if that's going to be said in today's game with the cameras, with the recording devices, and the teammates and the national media, what's at that point where you're at emotionally at all? And I've been on the field with the highly emotional men that are out playing football. Things are said. I don't condone anything that's said on the football field. Okay, that's all. Whatever comes out of your own mouth, you're responsible for those actions. But in today's world, with all those things there, and knowing that, and Mason's he's a quarterback, Pittsburgh Steelers, with Mike Tomlin as his head coach, with all the teammates around him, all of that, there's so much lose-lose in that for him to go there. And then I look at Myles Garrett, and I look at him, and I go, okay, could there have been something at that point that you could interpret at that when you're emotional and you're at a high level and you're fighting all that stuff? Could you have something have happened, have been said? What is the value of bringing this back? What win does it give you? Does it make you feel like you vindicated of why you did something? Okay, I can understand if it's vindicating what you felt like because you wanted to hit a quarterback over the head with a helmet. Okay, I can understand that. But I'm just like, where, if the NFL's done a thorough investigation, what Mike Tomlin, we didn't hear in that, is that he had friends that he said, I have people not only that are very close relationship with the Browns and within the NFL, and none of this, from coaches to players to anybody within that, to any guys that were out there, brought this up immediately after the game or during that when the game finished. Those are, because if it would have happened, I would have, okay, we got to deal with this right away. But none of it happened.
But, and then on the heels of that question, ESPN reached out to John Dorsey. Because Mason or Myles Garrett said that his defense from the get-go was he told Dorsey, he told the staff that, hey, this is what happened. And remember that Josina Anderson tweet immediately in the aftermath that was tweeted and deleted? We talked about it when this thing happened, that it was very odd that Josina Anderson would tweet it and delete the fact that she alluded to the fact that that's what Mason Rudolph had said to Myles Garrett. And so ESPN reached out to John Dorsey, and John Dorsey confirmed via text message that that in fact was Mason or Myles Garrett's defense immediately following the game. And so when Mike Tomlin says that, it's like, that just goes to show you how dysfunctional the Browns franchise is as a whole, too.
Yeah, completely.
You know, that John Dorsey and Freddie Kitchens weren't like, hey, Mike, here's a heads up, man. This is why he went off the rails like that. They didn't even think to go and do that respect to Mike Tomlin and the Steelers organization is to tell them why their player went off the handle, supposedly. Like, it's incredible to me how all the layers of this led to this point.
Yeah, the other thing is that maybe those that are out there thinking that the NFL is hiding something, that they have come out and made statements, that they have done all the investigation, that there was no audio or none of that was available, and that nothing was destroyed. There was no tapes destroyed or anything of that nature. I tend to believe that if there was something said, we'd get more than just Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not believing either side at this point. I just don't know what value this is doing as we're continuing to talk about this. And then you're going after both sides. You're going after each other's character. So one's a liar. In this situation, one person's telling the truth. One person's is a liar. That's where we're at.
That's the part about this is there's no room for both to be right.
No.
One person's right and one person's wrong. No. And it's very clear.
And you just get on either side. And whoever it is, get on either side and believe who you believe. And that's where this is. That's why it's so. It doesn't create any help for it.
That's why I think Mike Tomlin coming out in defending Mason Rudolph so vehemently is a sign that the Steelers actually did look into this and did do their research, because Mason Rudolph is not their franchise quarterback. Mason Rudolph is not even their second string quarterback. Remember, Mason Rudolph got benched at the end of last year for Duck Hodges. So Mason Rudolph is a third string expendable position on the roster. If there was any doubt in Mike Tomlin's mind that any of this happened, do you think that he would be defending him the way that he is?
Oh my God, no.
Because he's a third string quarterback at this point. He's not QB1. Or two.
It's beyond that, too. But this is this is a personal character. But
exactly.
I agree with you. Would he defend him? If he believed in him, it didn't matter if he was the quality control guy all the way to the number one. But I understand your point. But this is a personal character issue. And Mason Rudolph has said, I might entertain a defamation lawsuit. And talking to his lawyers or anything like that, you don't get a chance. If there is a belief that you've done this, if there really is, you don't get a chance to just kind of say, it's my word versus his. You got to defend yourself to the utmost degree all the way to the end. I know if I was Mason Rudolph and I believed in that situation, I would do everything in my power, everything to defend myself.
55305. That is the fan text line.
And probably vice versa for Myles Garrett, too. If you believed that and you said it, but are you sure? I don't know.
The war of words now between Mason Rudolph and Myles Garrett, it could end up in a courtroom. Dustin Cam on the fan. Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns lobbed quite the accusation against Mason Rudolph of the Pittsburgh Steelers, saying he used the N-word, which is what set him off and led him to rip off the helmet of Rudolph and hit him with it last November. Mike Tomlin, head coach of the Steelers, went to First Take and defended his quarterback and went to great lengths to do so.
I struggle with that, to be honest with you, man. It's been a lot of negativity around Mason Rudolph. He got fined $50,000 for essentially getting beat up. You know, his reputation has been tarnished because of the allegations, none of which was founded. He was a quarterback in the losing circumstances at the end of a football game. Obviously, he was an active participant in the altercation, but a lot of the things that have gone on beyond that, I struggle with.
I mean, it's a pretty firm defense by Mike Tomlin, his head coach for Mason Rudolph, of his quarterback and of his third string quarterback. Did it surprise you? You said that a lot of things are said and done. Did it surprise you when you heard what Myles Garrett is accusing Mason Rudolph of saying? That something would be uttered like that on a football field?
Yes.
It surprised you to that extent?
Yes.
Yeah.
I never heard that. I've never heard that interaction uttered in my entire career.
Yeah, on a football, like on a football field. Yeah, between opponents, especially.
Nope.
Like, you hear some pretty vile things, but that is one that is off limits for sure.
Yeah.
Because you have teammates that are African American and black, and you know, you have teammates that if they heard that, they would turn on you just as quick as Miles Garrett did.
Well, it's just not just that. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. I wouldn't. I mean, it just.
Well, I know you wouldn't. But
I know, but the skin color has nothing to do with that interaction. That's just horrifically not even in the conversation of what you do to anybody, even in the respect of when those guys. I'm not saying you. Just
racism, though, is like that'll make everybody turn on you.
Yeah. This is a question. This comes in on the text line here. It said, should you be able to use deadly force to defend yourself if someone calls you a name? I don't have that specific answer for you. I know that anybody that's ever been attacked or anything like that, verbally or anything like it hurts. And you'll do a lot. You'd be surprised what words do to people. So to say that it's just easy to turn and walk away, it's hard to turn and walk away. It's extremely hard to turn and walk away. So I don't have that specific answer. I know it would be very hard for me to do that, but I have to think about the repercussions, and that's where the maturity factor comes in, is that as I was looking to Ike Taylor this morning, he was talking with on Golic and Wingo show, and he was saying this happens in training camp all the time. Fights like this happen, but they don't happen with the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes this one so bizarre. Is that it involved a quarterback.
And he went back after him once they got up and he tried to grab the face mask and all that stuff too. You know, this is a decent text at 55305. Sorry, how does the NFL not have audio? They have mics and cameras everywhere.
Well, they don't have audio of everything, guy. You must see. Do you think that there's everybody has audio of everything? That's maybe this is a confusing factor of the not everybody's mic'd up. There's not mics with everybody. One of the things, though,
in that Miles Garrett interview with Mina Kimes is that he says every quarterback has a microphone in their helmet, and for some reason, Mason Rudolph was on his second helmet that game and did not have a microphone in that helmet. That's part of the interview. I'm like, I don't know if that's
true. He has proof of that.
That's what he said.
I know they have speakers in their helmet.
This is just what Miles Garrett said. I don't know if he's right. I don't know if I believe it either. I'm just saying that's what he said in that same interview.
Because the technology that's in that helmet is all for speakers for the quarterbacks to hear, not talk back.
Right.
They don't have the ability to talk back. Yeah. Now, they sometimes put microphones in shoulder pads. And some of those where they're mic'd up and some other spots.
I'd never heard of it being in a helmet, but that's what he said.
Well, everybody thinks every player's mic'd up because we hear so many mic'd up segments of all the players in the NFL so often, you know? Like Philip Rivers in his time with the Chargers is done, and all of a sudden we see like a 4-minute video of the best of Philip Rivers mic'd up. We hear, you know, Brady and Mahomes and all these guys when they're mic'd up. So you have this idea that, at least every quarterback is, but I think that it came out almost immediately during the investigation that the two guards for the Steelers were mic'd up in that. And apparently they just weren't rolling in between plays on the audio, which is also a surprising thing that somebody would stop.
But let's be truthful with that. What is the value for the NFL? What is the value for the NFL to have that audio?
To have the hear whether or not he said it.
But understandable. So in that mindset of that, I'm not saying they're trying to hide it or dump it or anything. How does that help the NFL if they have that audio and then they do decide to release it? And they do, what does that do for the league? What does that do for Miles Garrett? What does that do for...
It vindicates Miles Garrett.
But what does that do for the NFL overall? It starts a whole nother massive win on either side. I'm looking at it from the devil's advocate side.
And that's
side.
Why this thing has legs.
It has legs because it's a he said, she said.
Well, I know.
That's why it has legs.
And there's this idea that the NFL could be covering something up because here's also one thing that the NFL doesn't have going for it is that they've covered some stuff up before and swept things under the rug. Now, you'd hope that they'd have more transparency now, but... They've in the past, whether it's player discipline or, you know, hiding information from the players in the public, you know, about concussions and whatnot from the 70s and 80s, the NFL has a history of just kind of looking the other way on some stuff. And it would not be good for the league for it to come out now. That's for dang sure, because Mason Rudolph was not punished outside of a $50,000 fine, like Mike Tomlin said, for getting his butt kicked.
So this says make them take a lie detector. I don't know if that's a legal thing that you can do. Once you get into a defamation, that'd be a question for a legal analyst of some sorts. If you get into a defamation of character lawsuit, can you, because I know you go into discovery process about asking questions and doing all that. I don't know if you can force someone legally into that. I have no idea. But how much does a lie detector test? I don't know how it holds up in the court of law. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
but if I was Mason Rudolph and I was Miles Garrett, I'd be suing him. I do whatever you can, but really, if a dude hits you over the head with a helmet, who has the leverage in this? That's the question. Who has the leverage here? If that's what I'm saying, then no more what ifs here.
Leverage.
Is there leverage for a lawsuit? Are there legs for a lawsuit on this?
See, and this is a question that I have for you.
I don't have a legal analyst point of view. I don't know.
I've heard that there is language within your NFLPA agreements that you can't sue for stuff that happens on the field. Like, you can't sue other players.
No.
That was said on, I heard that yesterday on one of the ESPN shows.
Unless that was part of the new collective bargaining agreement in 2010.
And it was kind of a question kind of posed out there. And I was like, I wanted to ask you about that. Like,
you mean from actions that happen on the field?
On the field.
Oh, yes. I thought you meant in general.
No.
Oh, okay.
Like, no. Yeah. In stuff that happens on the field, can you sue another player for something that happens over the course of a game? So this.
No, but this is happening off the field. This is a verbal abuse or verbal.
This is an accusation.
Yeah, it's an accusation of verbal abuse.
Libel.
That
slander.
That is slander that has now transpired off the field. This isn't an action on the field.
Right. But it was because of an action on the field. And that's where it's kind of the slippery slope in all of this is, can you sue a guy? Because the action that is being that started all of this was on the field. Can you sue somebody because it's kind of gone off the field now? That's a weird question that the NFL and that Mason Rudolph and Miles Garrett may be facing now.
I feel comfortable enough that there might be a few lawyers that are willing to take this on and do it just for the notoriety of that. Not maybe for good or bad, but whatever way, if you are Mason Rudolph and you believe you are telling the truth, you defend your name to the end.
Do you have to wait until your career's over, though?
No.
Like, I mean,
no, why?
Well, because we know the NFL will say, hey, if you're going to sue one of your own that kind of goes against those unwritten rules, would you not give him a job? You know, because he's got litigation against another player while he's trying to play.
I don't have that answer.
Yeah. 55305, that's the fan text line. Next hour, the Astro sign stealing. It gets new legs every single day. And we discuss Greater Idaho. Hot and Cool is next, though, on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.